Welcome to Faith and Freedom. We hope to inform, inspire, and encourage you to stand up for faith and freedom as we discuss victories and challenges in the courts, in public policy, and in the culture. Faith and Freedom is brought to you by Liberty Counsel, a litigation, education, and policy organization. Join us now as we address the latest cultural issues across America and around the world.
So what does it mean to have dueling electors? We now have dueling electors in 7 states. We're going to be talking about it on Faith and Freedom. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Joining me is Holly Mead.
You know, Matt, this is really a historic time in our lives that we're experiencing. You know, when you talk about dueling electors, the last time that happened was in 1960, when many people probably weren't even born that are listening, when the governor of Hawaii certified electors for Republican Richard Nixon, and the Democratic electors cast their votes for Democratic nominee John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, and so that actually set up a contest with the contesting of the electoral votes in Hawaii. So what we have are 7 states where you have dueling electors, which means that sets the foundation for January 6. And January 6 is the next date in the sequence in the election process. That's with the new Congress after they're sworn in early January. January 6, they meet, and that's when the electoral votes are ultimately counted and they're certified by Congress. But when we have these dueling electors, we have a number of cases that are ongoing in litigation. You have the state legislatures that can act as well. And if those Democratic electoral votes for Biden ultimately are challenged or thrown out, then you have these 7 states with the Republican electoral votes that actually will go, obviously, for President Donald Trump. So it is not over by any means. That's why these states did the dueling electors, to set up the foundation for this challenge that will certainly take place on January 6th.
Right. And the bottom line is, you know, the evidence for fraud has been overwhelming. It's very clear there's been a lot of fraud in this election. But as the process proceeds, I think with these lawsuits and things that are going on and the forensic reports, that truth is coming out as the process proceeds toward January 6th.
Yeah, no question about it. And so what we have here is indeed, the director of national intelligence, because of President Trump's executive order going back to last 2018,
yeah,
about interference in the process.
No foreign interference.
You had to come out with a report 45 days after the election. And before that happened, just before the 45 days expired, which was recently, the director of national intelligence said that there is evidence of foreign interference in the 2020 elections, and he named the countries China, Iran, and Russia. Now, the report will be forthcoming and detailed, but that is very significant information, and we obviously have seen and we've documented so much evidence of fraud along the process.
Yeah, even though people don't hear about it in the media, which is tragic, but not surprising, the evidence is overwhelming.
Yeah, so let's look at some of the other situations that have had contested elections. The first one we've mentioned before in Faith and Freedom is 1800. That was the contest between John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. Those were the two primary leading candidates. Adams was more of a Federalist, a federal rights person, and Adams was opposed to Jefferson, who was a states' rights person. So Jefferson decided to run with Aaron Burr. And what ultimately happened in that particular situation is that you didn't have your president, vice president on the ticket like you do now. You get the number one, number two vote, and number one gets president, number two gets vice president. Well, the people that voted for Jefferson, one of them forgot to not vote or vote for the opposing party, the opposing candidate. And so both the front runners, Jefferson and his running mate, if you will, ultimately got the same votes. So they were tied. Mm. And there was no 12th Amendment at the time. And consequently, what happened is The Congress had to convene, and on the 37th time that they voted, they ultimately gave the presidency to Thomas Jefferson.
So was that election, was that a catalyst for the 12th Amendment to be enacted?
That was the catalyst. That was 1800, and so they said, we need to have a different process because we never envisioned a tie like this, and so the 12th Amendment came into being. And the 12th Amendment says that if one of the parties, the candidates, does not get a majority, and it's easy to see that when you don't have the party system, you could have three people and nobody gets a majority. But you could also have it with two people, and you could have it in this election. That means the 12th Amendment kicks in, and then one state gets one vote. Each state gets one vote. So the large states, the small states, they each get one vote. And right now, the number of states that we have are predominantly Republican. The Republican legislatures in Republican-controlled states are more than the Democratic-controlled states, and consequently, that election would likely go to, obviously, Donald Trump if it goes to the 12th Amendment. That's if, on January 6, the election is considered contested. So that's what we have. We also had contested elections in 1824 with John Quincy Adams. It seems like the Adams are always in these contest elections with the president. That was Andrew Jackson versus John Quincy Adams. Mm-hmm. We also have one in 1860 involving Abraham Lincoln. And we have 1876. That's the Rutherford B. Hayes election. You had 1912, 1948, 2000. Of course, we've talked about that, the Bush versus Gore. And when you look at the Rutherford B. Hayes situation, it was Rutherford B. Hayes, the governor of Ohio, versus Sam Tilden, the governor of New York. And what happened is there was a contest of 19 electoral votes, far fewer than what's at issue in this election.
Hayes being the Republican and Tilden being the Democrat.
Yeah, and so what ultimately happened was those were under contest. The election was contested. And so instead of them reverting to the 12th Amendment, which they had the 12th Amendment by that time, they tried a compromise. And so they created a bipartisan commission. And the commission was to have equal number of Democrats and Republicans and then some independent. Well, what ultimately happened, it had the same number of people from Democrats and Republicans, but one of the individuals decided to drop out and become a United States Senator. He was Supreme Court Justice David Davis. They ended up voting along strict party lines, and the commission awarded Hayes all three of the contested states in early March 1877, making him the winner by one electoral vote.
One vote.
So Rutherford B. Hayes won.
Wow.
Of those 19 contested votes, Rutherford B. Hayes won by one vote. Wow. And again, because of the makeup of that commission, it was supposed to be sort of offset, but one of them that was on the commission, the Supreme Court Justice, dropped out. And therefore, a Republican was named to replace him. And that's how you got this vote along party lines, and consequently Hayes got the electoral votes awarded to him, and he won by one vote.
Wow. So what can we expect to happen on January 6th?
Well, on January 6th, what will happen is it's unknown exactly what will happen, but what we do know is that this is the next time, and these members of the House and the Senate, they ought to look at this as like part of the American Revolution. The Republic is at stake. We're talking about significant election fraud, not just in this issue, but we're also talking about even international interference from foreign countries.
National security, we the people, our votes have been stolen. There's so many factors here at stake.
And then we're talking about the future of future elections.
Absolutely.
So what will happen is we already have members of the Republican House, members of the Republican Senate that say that they are going to contest the election. Now, we also have an article or two, there's actually several articles, that Mitch McConnell is asking the Republicans not to object to the Electoral College. Well, we have a petition, and we have a fax. You can go to lcaction.org, our sister ministry, lcaction.org, Liberty Council Action. And we want you to voice your opinion to the members, the leadership of the U.S. House, U.S. Senate, and that includes Senator Mitch McConnell. He cannot stand in the way of over 70 million people that will be completely irate if this election doesn't have the opportunity to be contested in the normal constitutional way. He cannot use his seat to crush the voice of over 70 million people and stop the Senate or the senators from voicing their objection. For more information, go to Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org, lc.org, and also visit lcaction.org, lcaction.org.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org, lc.org.